And now, recorded live in front of microphones from beautiful downtown Burbank, California and Minneapolis, Minnesota, this is Vice Presidents Being Number Two in the White House, the podcast. Hey everybody, it's Jason Klom and Matt Sachs.
Yes, broadcasting live from the Minneapolis, Minnesota metro area here.
So we've got quite a bit to talk about this week. Obviously, we're a little late on the draw as far as the unfortunate passing of Gore Vidal, but we have to talk about him, obviously.
Yes, yeah, it goes without saying that, you know, we need to talk about it because it is like our most famous interview for the movie so far, and the 2 hours of footage we shot with him is going to be a big part of the film.
Yeah, and definitely.
It's something that people ask us about a lot because we're well known for it, and Gore gave us the great quote about the film that we are featured on the website and in our trailer and everything like that.
Exactly. I only wish, I think I mentioned this in the last podcast, I only wish we could have recorded, you know, more of the just the sitting and listening to him talk about non-VP stuff. I wish we had some of that on tape because that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, people ask me about the interview and I say, well, the interview was great. It's fantastic. It's fascinating. It's interesting. But it was the stuff when the camera was off that, you know, showed him as who he really is as a person, you know.
Definitely.
With the imitation of Truman Capote.
Yep.
You know, just like, you know, me doing Shakespeare with him. That was what I wrote about.
Oh, yeah, right.
When I told him, you know, that was like getting into the anecdote. It was after the interview. He did the little impersonation of Truman Capote, which was hysterical. And then I asked him to be an honorary board member of my theater company
right.
in L.A. at the time, Arc Theater Company. And he asked me, well, what did you just do? And I said, oh, well, I just did a production of The Comedy of Errors.
Right.
Shakespeare. And he quoted a line from it.
That's
and luckily,
right.
I knew the next line. He gave the cue, and I knew the next line, and I gave it right on cue.
Yeah.
And he was very happy about it.
That's good. Yeah, you're right. You're right. It was. I mean, just his house alone was enough. I mean, you're going up into the Hollywood Hills, and just it's kind of I guess a small house for the hills, I suppose. But still, no doubt that Gore Vidal lived there. I mean, there was a tapestry of some kind on the ceiling that he said was from what, the 14th century?
Is that yeah, like something that was made in the 14th century, and then there was those like pieces of marble, the bust.
Yeah, the Greek busts that were at least 2,000 years old that I really felt like I was going to knock over the whole time.
Yeah. He said they came, remember, from a ship that was sunk in the harbor.
That's right. Yeah.
Up from the ocean, like they'd been on the ocean floor, and then they came up, and they were like things that were meant to be put into like Romans' houses in Rome and everything.
It was like this slapdash museum that was a little difficult to walk around and not feel like you were going to break something. I mean, the lights we set up at first were pointed at the tapestry on the ceiling, and I was like, no, we have to move those. I do not want to melt/burn anything in Gore Vidal's house, you know.
Oh yeah, no, I felt like, you know, I had to like I sat down in a chair, obviously, you know,
mm-hmm.
Sitting in a chair, and I'm thinking, is this chair, am I going to break it? Is this chair, like, how old is this chair? I think at one point he did say, like, oh, that chair came from, like, my grandfather's house when I was born on West Point.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Military Academy. And I'm like, jeez.
I know, it's insane. It's insane. And he was just so nice. I mean, we only had, like, 2 hours, but he gave us plenty of time to set up. He just hung out, and then when he was done, he just said, I'm tired. I'm done. And then it was easy, you know.
It was very easy. Like, he finished what he wanted to say. He took a breath and he said, I'm tired. Are we done? And I said, yep, we're done. We're whenever you wanted to be done, we're done.
And, yeah.
And then sandwich sent to him. And then we talked. And then it wasn't like it wasn't the real him on camera.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt. He was not shy about going on camera. It's not like it was hard to get Gore Vidal on camera. I mean, let's be honest. But
No, Gore is famous, like, I know this is like a family show, but Gore is famous for a quote saying, you know, paraphrasing him, never turned down any opportunity to either be on television or have sex.
Exactly. Right.
And so he agreed to the, I mean, like, that, the first thing I guess we should say is, like, when it came to getting the interview, all I did was call the number that I got for him at his house. He picked up his own phone.
Right.
He answered his own phone. It wasn't like a butler or a servant answered the phone. He picked up his own phone and said, hello. And it's, I'm like, is this Mr. Vidal? And he's like, yes. How may I help you, sir?
That's awesome. That's good.
And then I just asked him, we'd like to interview you for our movie. And he's like, well, talk with my assistant and we'll arrange something. No problem. I'm happy to do it.
That's awesome.
It was that simple.
I know. And it was really fast. I mean, we got it done pretty quickly. I just, I wish we could put more of the interview up online. We do have a lot of the videos up, though, on YouTube. I need to link to all of them on the new Tumblr blog.
Sure.
But, yeah, I mean, there's at least two featuring his quotes. I mean, like I said, there's 2 hours of footage where we covered as many VPs as we thought he might actually have an opinion on. Mostly Burr. Yeah.
Mostly it covered Aaron Burr, but of course, you know, we talked about the VPs that he's met and encountered.
Right. Oh, that was actually him talking about Henry Wallace, which was great because Henry Wallace knew his father, right?
Yes. There was that picture. He pointed out the picture of Henry Wallace with his dad and Amelia Earhart or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it was something like, I think you said something like, you were mentioning offhand, you weren't dismissing it, but you mentioned something offhand about us having a picture of Wallace. He's like, well, you don't have one like this. You don't have one of my father, Roosevelt, and Wallace.
Exactly. So, it was like that. Yeah.
So we like panned to that immediately so that he understood that we got the gravity of that. It's a pretty great picture, too. And, I mean, he talks, like I said, about Burr. We got him to talk a little bit about King, if only because he's the only quote-unquote suspected homosexual. I put suspected as though there's some sort of a witch hunt, but, you know, that's very likely he was homosexual. And then him saying, I think we have that one in one of the trailers, where he says, well, that one of our vice presidents might have been a degenerate is not surprising at all, or something. I don't remember exactly.
He says in the trailer, he's quoted throughout it, and it's got some great, you know, stuff. He says, yes, like, that one of our vice presidents might have been sexually degenerate can never be ruled out.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And I do have another one, actually, that I don't believe is uploaded. That, again, it's something that I think might work for the beginning of the documentary. Again, anybody who's joining us on the second episode, don't know why you would be. Matt and I have been doing a vice presidency documentary for 6 years. We're working on a book. We're working on a number of projects related to the vice presidency, including a children's book. But this documentary, the biggest interview we got, obviously, we've been talking about is Gore Vidal. And, yeah, I mean, we got him talking about everybody as much as we, you know.
I mean, the thing is, like, he'd met vice presidents going back to the, like, Harding administration.
Right, right. I mean, he mentioned John Nance Garner back to the point when he was, you know, like an 8-year-old kid.
Him on the Senate floor when he was interning for his grandfather, the senator from Oklahoma.
His blind grandfather.
Yes, that's what makes the anecdote so great.
So funny. And he was just, I don't know, I mean, it comes with age, but it also doesn't help that he was, you know, this beautifully articulate man, that just his stories that might have, in the hands of anybody else, might have been simple and not as interesting. He just tells them with such panache that it's like, oh my God, you can't not listen.
No, he makes the story great, he tells it in a great way, and then he adds like a button to it or a little thing to add to it that makes you remember it, and leaves you remembering the details of it. Obviously, you know, it goes without saying, he's one of the great writers and speakers of the last, you know, 50, 100 years. I mean, even people who don't like his fiction have said, you know, that he's the greatest essayist of American history since, like, Emerson or Thoreau.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing, too, is it's interesting because we've got, you know, all these interviews up with him. Well, one or two. The big one's the Burr one. I think that's probably gotten the most views because of him. But so many, it's even those interviews we did were controversial in that people are always treating his assertions of fact as specious because he's well known for embellishing, because he's a historical novelist. You know, it's
right.
You know,
like he never claimed that these are the history.
Right. Right.
He puts fictional characters in the books.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Burr is narrated by a fictional character that he made up.
Right, right.
And but, you know, that's his vehicle to tell the history of it.
Yeah, and the things we asked him about were purely factual, too. So if anybody out there is questioning it, you can, because he's the source. I mean, that's what you do in a documentary. You know, you go with your sources. But we fact-checked as much of it as we possibly could right. at the time, you know, before we cut those. I mean, to be fair, we were like, well, we want to get something up with our Gore Vidal interview because the documentary wasn't going to happen anytime soon. So, you know, we cut it together as best we could. But controversy's fine. It makes people talk.
Right.
But the point is, obviously, in that one, that Burr is an interesting man and he's more than just a devil.
Right, and the other thing about it that's interesting is, like, again, kind of paraphrasing Gore, but Gore once famously said that people like reading and writing about history because it's basically gossip.
Right, right,
we
right.
We don't really know what happened all the time.
Exactly, and you can take advantage of that as a historical novelist.
Right, and also, Gore says, you know, in the interview, and it's on camera too, he says, like, whatever, you know, when he gets to the Burr-Hamilton duel and what caused it and everything, he says... He talks about the, you know, the quote in the newspaper that's, you know, in print that everyone knows about, like, Hamilton saying, I have, you know, worse things to say about Colonel Burr, and he's despicable and not to be trusted. Those are in print, so we know Hamilton says that.
Yeah.
But it's Gore's, and this is, like, okay, spoiler alert for those who want to read Burr, which I've read, like, 10 times now.
Uh-huh.
Spoiler alert, Gore has... And he says this in our interview on camera, and you can watch the video of it. He says, whatever he said about him, I have my theories. And he says, they're only theories.
Yep.
He's clear to say, this is what I think. It is not documented. It is not fact.
Right.
This is what I think. But in the book, in the novel, and again, I'm saying novel, not biography.
Right.
Novel, Gore has that Hamilton accused Burr of incest with his daughter, Theodosia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is there any source beyond that book that even suggests that, or is that just pure just invention on his part?
It really is, like, his theory maybe alone, or at least he came
mm-hmm.
up with it.
Because mm-hmm. I've looked for it, you know, I've hunted it down. There's plenty in the historical record to show the mud that was slung outside of that possibility, you know?
Yeah. There was Burr was always famously... portrayed as being sexually deviant
right.
by his opponents.
I think it is hard for us to grasp the concept of honor at the time. Still, some people over-exaggerate what it meant, and then other people think, you know, well, it had to have been something more sinister or that he said, you know, some other offense rather than strictly, he's a bad man. You know, no one should trust him. But, I mean, you're a politician. Your life is based on people trusting you and shaking your hand. That seems to be enough.
Yes. And, like, in those days, it was fine to say stuff about political stuff, disagree mm-hmm. about people politically.
Sure.
But when attacks became personal,
mm-hmm.
questions of personal honor, behavior, you know, that's when you got into dueling territory.
Right, right.
When you did name calling. And you accuse people of being dishonest in their personal life.
Yeah, yeah. I
disagree about people with people politically, but if you got personal with them and
right.
made personal remarks about them, these were dueling issues. And
yeah.
the issue with the Burr-Hamilton duel was the use of the word despicable.
Ah, right.
And that's what we clearly cite. Like, Hamilton wouldn't back off from him saying, I said despicable. And Burr saying, well... trying to get a clear answer of, like, are you talking about my political ideas or me personally?
Right.
And Hamilton wouldn't clarify, and it got all fuzzy, and you have to read the letters, which are a lot of really, you know, as interesting as I find this subject, reading
yeah.
the letters is not very interesting.
No, no. I mean, it was hard enough. I guess we can talk about this now, right? We can probably talk about the project that we just started working on, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah. We repitched Vice Precedents as a documentary to the History Channel. They've turned us down once every 4 years. Again, not thinking there's any importance to the Vice President office. And that's their they're right, I suppose.
Because they're right, an opinion.
Of course. The problem is there are no ice road truckers in the vice presidency, so that's part of the problem.
Or monsters.
No monsters either.
No Greek gods or Roman gods or exactly. Norse gods. Like Thor doesn't make a little appearance. I'm talking about in reference to Clash of the Gods, which I actually like that show a lot.
I haven't seen that.
It's a really good show, actually, and not to get off subject, but it actually is a really good show, and it talks about like how these myths affected religious belief in those ancient societies and how they've passed down to us. So it actually has historical context, unlike Ice Road Truckers or whatever the fishing show is.
What's the duel show that's vaguely similar to the one that we pitched to them?
Oh, that's on Spike.
Oh, that's on Spike. Okay, well, I don't feel so bad, but it's clearly not... All right, well, that's not so bad. And then what's the other channel that also... Stars is now doing a show that's very similar to one we were pitching.
Yes.
Oh, it's okay. This is what happens in Hollywood, people. These ideas are... We are not alone.
Yeah.
But...
We come up with an idea, and then people say, no. And then somebody more famous says, here's my idea, and it's very similar to ours. And people go, yeah, that sounds interesting.
Not bad. Well, you know, a track record does help in that case. But we also just... pitched, after they turned down vice presidents, we pitched a biography of Aaron Burr, and we wrote a 7-page treatment or so for it, which is, you know, we're still shopping that one around to other places as well, because it's good.
It wasn't just a biography, it was a mini-series in the vein of John Adams.
Right, a five-part.
Pat McCoy's.
Exactly.
But they just... So both of these miniseries were both very successful, obviously.
Yeah, and Matt had the great point that, you know what, it's like John Adams as far as its historical importance, but it's like the Hatfields and the McCoys, given the sex and violence. It's more comparable as far as that goes.
Exactly. I mean, the one, in watching John Adams, the one flaw in it is, and this is like no one's fault, because it's the way the man lived his life, John Adams was a person who fought the battles in the Congress and in the halls of diplomacy, like in Versailles and in England and in Congress in Philadelphia, trying to get the Declaration passed and get the American colonies allies to aid us in the war.
A lot of talking.
Had political battles as president. His battles were of that nature. Mm. He did not wield a weapon or fight a gun battle,
which is why they resorted to weird. Shaky camera for no apparent reason on that miniseries. That always made me uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, the only action sequences really in it are the opening sequence at the Boston Massacre.
Right.
Where he wasn't even there. He was the lawyer for the soldiers put on trial for it.
Yeah, you gotta put something in there that sort of links him to action having happened, I guess.
Yeah, well, he did defend them, and it was a very dangerous thing to defend them, you know, like British soldiers in Boston, and his cousin being the leader of the Sons of Liberty, the most radical group of revolutionaries at the time of the Boston Massacre in the whole country, in the whole continent.
Right.
So it was dangerous, and it was a very brave thing to do, personally brave thing to do, because they were very unpopular, and people wanted them executed, and that's where his famous quote, "Facts are stubborn things," comes from.
Right.
Defense of the British at the Boston Massacre.
Yeah.
The other only action sequence is when he was on a boat traveling from, you know, America to go to Paris. And that was dangerous. Like, the British Navy controlled the ocean, and it was very dangerous mission to go.
But then
he had a son with him too. Future President John Quincy Adams was on the boat with him as well.
Then cut to Aaron Burr, and it's pretty much action from the beginning, which it's like, you know, anybody could do this film, but at the very least, we know the story better than most people. So if you're out there listening, people who make movies and pay for movies, pay us to make a movie. It's a good movie.
You know, speaking of Burr movies, you know, we learned from Gore in talking to him that Burr, the book, the novel, which was always considered his most successful of the historical novels, or the most and the best one. Most reviewers and critics say it's the best one. Like, I just read an obituary in, I think, Time or Newsweek, and the guy says of Gore Vidal's novels, my favorites are Myra Breckinridge and Burr.
Mm-hmm.
And Burr. And for years, people have wanted to make the Burr novel into a film. Jack Nicholson optioned it famously.
That's interesting.
At once.
Who did? Sorry, you just broke up.
What's that?
You just broke up. Who did, the second person?
Jack Nicholson optioned it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Richard Dreyfuss also optioned.
Oh, right, right, of course. And Richard Dreyfuss we have actually talked with about variations on this project. You know, it was going to be a documentary originally, but, you know, we've got too good of a story now and too good of an outline to not make this. It would. It's, you know, a 5-part miniseries about Aaron Burr would be quite good.
Yes, it's a perfect combination of, like, you know, what we said. It has the revolutionary figures
mm-hmm.
and fame of Burr, because Burr interacted with all the founding fathers, with Washington, Jefferson, Adams, Alexander Hamilton, all of them. He was their contemporary, younger than almost all of them, except for Hamilton, but a contemporary of all of them, worked and served with all of them. And then... So there's that factor, the revolutionary figure factor, and his service in the Revolutionary War, where he actually was a hero and a great... People don't know this about him. He was a great military hero of the Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he got famous. And then, and then all the political intrigues of his life, the election of 1800, where he tied with Jefferson for the presidency, the 36 votes in Congress to decide who was going to be president.
Right.
And then, of course... The duel, the most famous duel in American history, in world history, maybe.
For sure.
And then there's and then being put on trial for treason. So there's all that, and then there's his personal life, which was filled with violence and sex and intrigue. So it had all those elements. It had the famous revolutionary figures of John Adams. It had the violence and the intrigue and the action of Hatfields and McCoy. And both these films got slews of Emmys and Emmy Awards. Emmy Awards, in the case of John Adams, it won like something like 9 Emmys or something like that. And Hatfields and McCoys just got something like 22 Emmy nominations or something like that.
Oh, really? 22?
Something like that.
Wow.
Like, all the main actors got nominated.
That's crazy.
Kevin Costner, Bill Paxton, Mayor Winningham, and Tom Berenger all got Emmy nominations.
Speaking of things that people can be nominated for, hello, Segway of the Year.
very nicely done.
Yeah, wasn't that beautiful?
Moving on from Gore, of course, we want to end this by saying we mourn the passing of Gore.
Of course.
He was a legend. We're always going to be grateful to him for the interview, for the quote that you can see on the film. I personally am grateful to him. He autographed my books, my copies of our book, mm-hmm. of his book. And we have that picture of us and him that, you know, is on our Facebook pages right now and is on the Vice President's page. And people always ask me, is that real? Is that, it's real. That's
yep.
really up with him at his house.
That'd be a weird one to Photoshop, to be fair.
Yeah, why would you do that?
Yeah, it was something I didn't appreciate as much at the time, but as the years have gone by, it's sort of sunk in, holy crap, I got to interview Gore Vidal, you know?
Yeah, it's something that you never forget, you mm-hmm. know, it's something like, when he passed, you know, and I was mentioning it to people during the recent Minnesota Fringe Festival, people were coming up to me and saying, you really did interview him. You really met him and talked with him. And I'm like, oh, yeah, at his house, 2 hours.
Have we talked about the show that you did in Minneapolis? Was it called the Encyclopedia Show?
Yeah, that's something we can talk about. You know, I want to get to the Ryan nomination, but
for
it's
sure.
definitely something we can talk about later.
Okay.
Definitely something. But it is, yeah, I have been interviewed on a show here in Minneapolis for about our subject matter and the making of the movie and everything.
That's awesome.
But, of course, losing Gore, Gore's passing, real tragedy. You know, he was 86 years old. He was expected. He was the last of the great post-war writers.
Right.
You know, with him gone, they're all gone now. Norman Mailer, Tennessee Williams, mm-hmm. Arthur Miller, Joseph Heller. Gore was the last.
Mm-hmm. And still vocal. Still very vocal. Politically.
He didn't retire after one novel
right.
or disappear. I mean, he was in Family Guy.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right. I'd forgotten about that.
He was on The Simpsons. He was on Family Guy.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote Ben-Hur. I mean, he's
yeah.
part of the American culture.
Definitely.
There's no denying it.
So, yeah, absolutely. We thank him for that.
We thank him for that, and we'll always be grateful for, like, the interview and being in his home and everything that we experienced there.
Mm-hmm.
So, going on to, like, and that, then now we can transition. Speaking of Burr being a vice president of the United States,
mm-hmm.
we have a new We have a brand new candidate for Vice President of the United States.
Mr. Paul Ryan.
Mr. Paul Ryan.
Of Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. Janesville, Wisconsin.
He's a very handsome-looking gentleman. He looks very friendly, but already more controversial. More controversial than Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin was more confusing. Paul Ryan's just exasperating to people. They're just, like, blown away. I mean, maybe they shouldn't be, given Romney's conservative nature, but if you were questioning Romney's conservative nature, if you're on the right side of things, when I say the right, I mean when you lean to the right, if you're questioning his conservative nature, well, this is obviously intended to sort of solidify that for you.
Yes, this is going, you know, the choice of Mr. Ryan, and it was made official this past Saturday. We've only had about 5 days to absorb it?
Yeah.
It's only been 5 days since it was made official.
Right, so to learn about the guy.
And of course, you know, he was always someone in the background that we're talking about. You know, there were lots of names being bandied about like there always are. He was always somebody who was sort of, people would say, oh, he'd be a great choice, but I don't think he'd accept it. Would he do it? He's so young. All sure. This sort of, 'cause he's only 42.
Right, right.
He's a very young candidate.
Definitely. He,
the youngest since Dan Quayle.
That's what I was thinking. But again, I think people have... Well, you go back to Dan Quayle, he sort of always seemed like this innocuous choice until the debates, at which point he just put his foot in his mouth.
Yes. Ryan is not innocuous.
No. Nope.
Ryan is somebody who people know about him. Because of his work on economic issues. And this is where, you know, he strengthens Romney in a lot of ways. He strengthens his conservative bona fides, as you pointed out. Mm-hmm. He helps lean the ticket more to the right and attract more right-wing voters from the Republican for the Republican Party.
Yep. And religiously, it's an interesting choice, if only because, you know, last election when Romney was a, you know, potential candidate, people wouldn't stop talking about the fact that he is, that he's Mormon. They wouldn't stop talking about it. And it seems to have been dropped as an issue. And this is, I mean, how many Catholics have we had on any potential ticket since JFK?
Right. It's been, you know, I mean, Kerry was a Catholic. John Kerry was a Catholic.
Right.
And Joe Biden is Catholic. Mm-hmm. Vice President Biden is Catholic. But really... it's not all that common.
No. I mean, obviously more so now, but I mean, I don't know if there's anything behind him choosing a Catholic, being a Mormon, if the Mormonism thing doesn't seem to be an issue. I am surprised, though. I am surprised that it's been completely dropped. I guess it's because they've got a strong conservative candidate. I don't know.
It's interesting because there's always that evangelical background saying... evangelicals seem kind of split on this. Some of them are so, and there's no other way to put it, some of them are so very desperate to get rid of President Obama that they're kind of like going, well, you know, at least Mr. Romney's pro-life, and he's, you know, Mormonism is a conservative religion, socially and morally. So they're like fine with it. But other evangelicals are like, oh, hang on here.
Right.
Mormonism is a cult.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not me saying this.
No.
This is evangelicals of the Republican Party have been quoted as saying, Mormonism is a cult. It is not Christianity. It is not what Jesus wants. It is a cult. It had, you know, endorsed, and part of its heritage is the, bigamism.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's part of its heritage.
I wonder...
disavowed by the modern Mormon church.
Mm-hmm.
The Church of Latter-day Saints today, of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints today, has said no to bigamy. But it's part of its heritage.
For sure. You were talking, before we started recording, we were talking about, you were mentioning, you know, obviously he's a choice as far as fiscally, people, you know, question what can Romney do about the budget that everybody's blaming on Obama. You know, what can he do? To pick a guy who is chairman of the House Budget Committee is not a bad move.
No, it's
obviously.
Not. It's a great choice, and this is what I said on the Facebook page of Vice Presidents the day it happened.
Mm-hmm.
This is my personal belief in studying this and looking at it and everything. The choice has clearly been made for Ryan. The strongest thing he brings to the ticket is an economic policy and plan.
Right.
He is a strong fiscal conservative. He wants to reform Medicare. He wants to reform Medicaid. He has designed a budget plan. He has submitted a budget, the Ryan plan and Ryan budget, to reform our economic system. He voted against, you know, the Health Care Reform Act. He voted against the Fair Pay Act of 2009.
Mm-hmm.
He voted against the Credit Card Holders Bill of Rights Act of 2009.
Yeah.
And he voted against the famous Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act.
Right.
Which he called that class warfare.
Right. Yeah.
He is a fiscal conservative who wants to. He voted for both of the Bush tax cuts.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to reform. He wants to get rid of Obamacare. And he wants to. Any restrictions on, you know, on Wall Street or anything like that, he's against it.
And it's interesting too. If you go to his website, paulryan.house.gov, besides his smiling handsome face, there's a big folksy farm in the background. So that's something obviously that Romney doesn't have. You know, I don't want to compare Romney too much to John Kerry, Kerry's choice of John Edwards, you know, this folksy Southerner whose father worked in a mill, you know, it's not entirely far off. Although I don't think Paul Ryan's background is necessarily rural in nature. He definitely represents a very, you know, an agrarian state.
Right. Well, the part of where he's from, I mean, he's from Janesville, Wisconsin, which is in the south eastern part of the state. I've seen it on the map, and I've sent people there as part of my job, my day job.
Mm-hmm.
The food on the table as opposed to the vice president stuff, which takes food off my table.
Right.
He's from a part of this. His father was a lawyer.
Right.
The family's lived there for about like five or six generations.
Mm-hmm.
They've been there for a long, long time. His grandfather was a U.S. attorney for the Western District of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
For Calvin Coolidge appointed him a Republican president. The family's always been conservative. And Republican, associated with Republicans. Ryan's father passed away when he was 16,
mm-hmm.
died of a heart attack. So he's sort of been on his own in that sense.
Right, right.
The thing that's interesting, if you look at his health plan stuff, comes from a very short-lived male side of the family where all his father, grandfather, great-grandfather, and his own father all died in their 50s.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting.
That's something to consider.
For sure.
Not for his father's death, he probably wouldn't have been able to afford paying for college.
Right, right.
His father's death, Social Security benefits is what he used to pay to go to college.
That's interesting. There's
there's the fact that he's like Edwards, like, you know, he's a young, good-looking guy,
right?
Class president and prom king and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and it's always smart to do. The only Obama didn't do that, but Obama obviously, you know, it's not atypical to pick a guy who's more of a loudmouth, and I don't mean that honestly in a derogatory way. To pick the guy who's more outspoken,
right?
And this, though Paul Ryan's maybe not a figurehead of any kind that we're used to. People know who he is. He's very much voted. His vote has been his voice. So he's loudmouthed in that way. You know, he's got a clear conservative line that he's voted in, and you know that speaks to a lack of fear toward your position politically, and that's something that anybody like Romney needs. As you know, you always need that as a backup. You always need somebody who's going to be willing to toe the line for you when you can't say certain things.
Right. Totally. Exactly. Perfectly put, Jason. And Ryan will do that. Ryan has experience with this. He actually worked for when Jack Kemp was the vice presidential running mate for Bob Dole in 1996, Ryan was his speechwriter on the campaign trail.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he wrote speeches for Kemp, Congressman Kemp, when he was the VP candidate for the in 1996 for the party. So he knows this. He knows he's been on the road for this.
That actually would speak more to his. I don't know. I don't know much about. As far as I know, Biden did not have any of that kind of experience. He's been much more of a what they like to call a grassroots politician, not so much the speech writing type, the young intern type. You don't picture Biden as that kind. What do we? If you put these two guys up against one another, what do you think the challenges are going to be come debate time?
That's a great question. Obviously, the choice of Biden by the Obama campaign was his extensive experience in foreign policy.
Right, right.
I mean, and since his being made vice president, Biden has headed the American efforts in working in China.
Mm-hmm.
He is the head of the war, the division handling the war in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Right.
I mean, Vice President Biden has a lot of power and influence in the Obama White House.
Yeah, and
he is not just the attack dog.
Right.
I mean, he was brought into the ticket to strengthen, at the time, Senator Obama's lack of experience.
Right, right.
I mean, Biden, it was a 5 or 6 term senator at that time.
Yeah.
Something like that. He'd been in the Senate for over 3 decades.
Yeah.
And he was brought in to strengthen, add experience, gravitas, and foreign policy experience to the ticket. He wasn't brought in because Delaware has only 2 electoral votes.
I mean, right.
There was no geographical.
No, not at all. Not at all.
He was somebody to strengthen the bona fide, and he wasn't somebody to strengthen Obama's liberal bona fides.
Mm-mm.
He was somebody to bring in to say, look, here's somebody who's done foreign policy, who's probably the biggest expert on foreign policy in the Senate right now,
mm-hmm.
as the vice president.
Right.
And also, he's a senator. He's been in the Senate for 30-some-odd years. He knows how to preside over the Senate. He's been watching it been done for over 30 years.
Yeah. So one of the first questions at the, at the first debate is going to relate to, Mr. Biden has this much experience. Mr. Ryan has considerably less experience, at least as far as years go. I don't know if that's going to be a point of contention, really, if they're going to be going up against one another because of their years. I mean, it's something to throw in one another's face. And then, of course, I mean, that always seems to be what they resort to. Oh, you haven't been doing this as long as I have, Sonny. I mean, that came into play with Quayle as well.
Yes, the Benson-Quayle debate emphasized the one's youth as opposed to the other's experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it was exploited perfectly
by
Benson. I don't think this sounds insulting, but I think Congressman Ryan, I think, is more intelligent than, at the time, Senator Quayle was. I just do.
For sure, for sure.
And I don't think Ryan's going to fall into that. The vice presidential debate is something I'm looking very much forward to. There'll only be one. There's only one.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be very interesting because the issue really about this election is the economy.
For sure.
And Ryan is the Republican economic expert. You could call him an economy policy wonk.
Yeah.
I find that term kind of insulting and... You know, a wonk is someone who knows a lot about something and is an expert on working and dealing
with
that.
Right.
Mr. Ryan has been in Congress since, something like 1998.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in Congress for he's won elections over and over and over again. Every, 2 years he wins.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been in Congress since 1998.
Right.
So he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting because the questions... Ryan's going to be able to sort of stand up on his own experience, as far as like we've already discussed, his ability to put together a budget, his voting history, whereas Biden is going. I mean, again, I don't know all about Biden's voting history. Of course, I don't know 100% of these guys' backgrounds, but he's going to have to sort of back up the existing administration, which is what you do. That's what you do.
A vice presidential debate is basically the two candidates saying, well, here, it depends on the election year. If it's an incumbent, like this year, it's Vice President Biden's going to have to say, well, here's what President Obama and I have done.
Exactly.
And Congressman Ryan will go, well, here's, and you did that wrong, and here's why, and here's how Mitt Romney and I'll change that.
Yeah, it's hard to say what the value of a vice presidential debate is other than entertainment.
It really is. You know, we say this as enthusiasts of the vice presidency and people who believe that the American voters need to know more about the office and the work it is and who the men who have served in it are.
Absolutely.
But really, it is just a case of the two candidates, or in this case, the incumbent and the candidate, saying, you know, defending their fellow nominees, or, you know, in the incumbents' position, an attack. It's going to be an attack, defend.
Yeah, and it's very hard. And I think usually there's maybe one question about, you know, what would you do if you had to take over the presidency? When honestly, that's like the critical question.
That's the critical question. The critical question always is, if God forbid something happens, what will you do?
Mm-hmm.
How prepared are you? Do you think you're ready to be president? Because that's the question that you have to ask a vice presidential candidate. It's the only question maybe that matters.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you ready, if there's a national tragedy, to lead the country and become president?
Yeah.
Do you think you're ready to be president?
Yeah, you know, give them
you have to decide if Joe Biden is more ready to be president than Paul Ryan.
Right.
If something tragic happens.
Yeah, I mean, people always forget that it's four guys competing for the presidency, and it's just never treated that way.
It really is. There's no denying that that's the way it needs to be looked at. And, you know, the other thing about Ryan and his selection is he's a young man. He's 42 years old.
Yep.
You know, he has a political future ahead of him.
For sure.
Now, that's what people said about John Edwards until all this ridiculous marriage and affair stuff and the embezzling stuff came up. John Edwards had a political future ahead of him.
Yep.
Paul Ryan is not John Edwards.
No.
As far as anyone knows, right?
Right. John Edwards wasn't John Edwards as far as we knew, but yeah.
Right. Paul Ryan is a young man. He's apparently happily married. He has, I think, like, I want to say 3 children.
Yes. Yep, he does.
3 children. He's only 6 years older than me. He's 42.
Right.
He's been, you know, he's got a career ahead of him. He's somebody who people were talking about as a presidential candidate in 2016, 2020.
Mm-hmm. Against
me? On the top of a lot of people's list.
So you're telling me he was going to run against me? That son of a bitch. I don't like him now. I kid, people. Go to jasonklom.com. You'll see what I'm talking about.
You'll see what we're talking about. But, he's definitely got a future.
Right.
And this, if Romney and Ryan lose this election, and the poll numbers say right now, if it was held today, they'd lose by only a little. They'd lose by maybe like about 16 electoral votes, and percentage-wise, they'd only lose by about maybe 2-4% with a margin of error of 1%.
Right.
If they lose, Ryan is still a bona fide, viable candidate for the presidency.
Yeah. I wonder if there's going to be any attempt, because we haven't seen it yet, to recapture the spirit of the 2008 election. The whole point of that, the reason it attracted, you know, all the liberals is, you know, that, you know, chant or otherwise, was, you know, hope in the face of this bleak darkness that, again, and I'm speaking from the perspective of Democrats and liberals, because, you know, let's face it, I'm pretty liberal. I don't call myself a Democrat. I'm technically a registered independent, just to avoid problems like that. But, you know, there was a spirit about it, that carried so much of the election, and there was a mistrust of the government that pulled him in. But the thing is, with Obama, with that kind of promise, potential, any promise that a candidate like that makes is going to be so scrutinized that I wonder where that's going to leave him, and would the other camp even try to be idealistic, or are they just going to tr- try and be more realistic. I mean, you bring in a guy who's a budget guy. That's realism. That's what you're trying to do, you know?
Yes. The selection of Ryan is a strong message by the Romney campaign and by Romney himself that this election is about the economy.
Yeah.
And that what President Obama and Vice President Biden have done for the economy has not been enough. It's not worked. Mm-hmm. That we're going into recession. That their economic policies are just more liberal tax and spend issues. Mm-hmm. That they're trying to incite class warfare. Mm-hmm. And that the economy is bad now. It'll only get worse if we get 4 more years of Obama-Biden.
Right, right.
You need to elect us because we're going to turn this ship around and fix the economy.
Yeah.
We're going to cut spending. We're going to cut taxes. We're going to strengthen our budget, pay off the federal debt more. Mm-hmm. We're going to make jobs, and we're going to shrink government.
Yeah.
This is the heart of the Romney-Ryan campaign.
I always wonder about the making jobs, the creating jobs promise. That always seems like blowing smoke to me. That's not a thing. You don't make jobs.
Unless you're FDR literally creating government agencies.
Right, with the CCC. Jobs, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's hard to say. Romney and Ryan are under the belief that if we strengthen the economy, if we help the people who are job creators,
yeah,
people who own companies and businesses, if we help them economically, their businesses become more successful, they'll need to hire more people and more jobs will be created. And also,
right,
these companies will need people to in all levels of jobs, mm-hmm, not just, you know, like high-ranking people, but going down into like hiring construction workers to build new buildings and mm-hmm hiring people to staff these buildings as janitors, as lunch people, as caterers, as cooks, as cafeteria workers. And then you hire secretaries and receptionists, and then you hire people
sure
to do sales staff, and it'll all come up. It'll trickle down and come back up.
It is funny to believe that, though. And again, I'm not judging. This is not me judging the right. This is not me loving the left. It is funny to say that and then say that the other side is for class warfare. When, you know, you're saying, hey, we need to strengthen this big, you know, we need to strengthen the richest part of the country.
Right.
This already very strong part of the country. You know.
These are the financial different issues of the financial system that the two parties have.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they are embodied strongly, these right-wing principles, by the vice presidential candidacy of Congressman Ryan.
Yeah.
He's a true believer in Reagan fiscal conservatism.
Sure. And you know what? Actually, there's something to be said for that. There's no doubt about it. If you've got a strong record, that goes a long way.
It does. And he has a record that is strong in this field. He's created a budget. He has a plan.
Yeah.
He has strong beliefs on these financial issues. He has voted for the Bush tax cuts.
Yeah.
He has been a strong vote in the House. He has sided with the Republican Party majority in the House 93% of the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And he votes often. He is there often. He's considered by most more conservative than the full House.
Mm-hmm.
He's far to the right of the conservative of the House. Like by about something like 70%. He's more conservative than 70% of the House right now.
Mm-hmm. Their strengths are so different. I just have no idea what we're gonna expect when the VP debate rolls around.
It's gonna be interesting because it's gonna focus on economic issues.
Yeah.
It'll focus on the economic issues. Maybe a question about education because Ryan is very considered not strong in education. Education is considered one of his weakest things. He's
okay.
In favor of for-profit colleges.
Okay.
He voted against giving federal aid to vocational schools.
Mm, that's interesting.
He's a big supporter of school vouchers.
Mm-hmm.
He does not like the NEA. He's spoken against the National Education Association Teachers Union.
Goodness.
He voted for No Child Left Behind.
Oh, it's very Dan Quayle already.
Education is very weak. He's very weak on education.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to spend less on education.
That's,
he wants to
support programs. Wow.
He wants to... Yeah, he's against a lot of these educational things. Now, this isn't to say, oh, he wants our children to be
stupid, sure.
Educated. No, not at all. he just has a way. He wants to keep government money out of education and lower it, lower spending on education, and he doesn't want to create any more things. And he's a big believer in private sector education. He's a big supporter of for-profit colleges.
Right. Right. Which, again, so, that's, you know, you want to talk about job creation, for sure, there's the argument to be made there.
That leads to that. But he's against the gainful employment rule.
Interesting.
So, it's an interesting, you know, you're saying I'm in favor of for-profit college, I'm against gainful employment to get people from vocational schools to get jobs. It's an interesting, some people would say, hypocritical way of voting and saying something about it.
Definitely. Definitely.
So, education is something that they could go after him on.
I just hope, you know, just for the sake of, you know, the way we've been writing the book, obviously we haven't written, you know, the book in a while. We haven't really worked on that in a while. But when we were writing the book, I think we were sort of stressing the idea that, you know, not only do we want people to understand the vice presidents themselves and the office, we want people to concentrate and vote for both guys, you know, vote for the... You're not. You shouldn't be voting for one guy and his toady. You need to pay. But the thing is, until we get a debate and a strong dialogue about what kind of president these people are going to be, not what kind of supporter of their running mate they would be. It's. I don't think it gives us an idea of what they are. You know.
It doesn't. I mean, the best way to find out if you think Paul Ryan is a good potential president is to go and do research on him.
Sure, sure.
Read his budget plan. You can read his budget plan. It is a book. It has been published as a book. It is his biggest claim to fame is his budget proposal as opposed to the Obama budget, the path to prosperity, or what he calls the American future. It's called both. The book is called The Path to Prosperity. Its official name in the congressional record is The America's Future Act. This is his clear economic philosophy laid out for you to read.
And you can get that at paulryan.house.gov also, by the way.
I mean, one major thing about it is that you have to understand, he wants a five-year spending freeze on every single dime of discretionary spending.
That's interesting.
A five-year spending freeze. That's a long spending freeze.
Yeah, that's that just enough to carry him into two, you know... You always do it more than 4 years, you know.
Yes. I mean, he's modified the plan since then, but that plan has been heavily criticized by economic experts like, you know, Nobel Prize winner Paul Krugman. Hated it. He thinks it's horrible.
There's a trailer for it. There are videos for it on his website. I need to watch these, and I
need to watch them too. To be
I stress. I'll put a link on the blog for sure, but I stress that you should go and check this out. When you get there, it looks like you also get to a nice lighthouse in the background. So folksy, man. he's competing with Joe Biden in the folksy category for sure.
Well, folksy wise, let's get into that. Like, you know, how he is as a person.
Yeah.
We're coming up on an hour, but we can spend a little time on this. Yeah. He has a natural. He's a very charismatic young man. He's 42. You know, people like him. They like that he stood up to President Obama at, like, budget meetings and a debate between the Congressional Budget Office and him, represented by, you know, Ryan, who's the head of it, talking with the president. He makes people comfortable. Even seniors who are terrified of him changing Medicare.
Yeah.
And he's made it perfectly clear, I won't change Medicare for seniors or anybody 55 and over now.
Yeah.
It's everyone 55 and under I change it for.
Right.
This is another center point of his economic plan. But seniors like him still. They find him like a charming young man.
Of course they do, of course.
And he's got a beautiful wife. He's got young children. He makes social conservative issues attractive to people.
Although, man, you wouldn't know that looking at Facebook. Although, I guess my friends might lean a little the other way, obviously. But, boy, oh boy, is there an uproar over, you know, his position on women's rights.
Yes.
And women's issues.
Going into, like, we talk a lot about economic issues, which is the center point of this election. There's no denying that he's a strong conservative person. He is strongly pro-life.
Yeah.
He is. He voted to cut off all federal spending of Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
He co-sponsored a Sanctity of Life Act about like that said that fertilized eggs would have all the rights of being actual living people.
Interesting.
Say what you will about that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's up to you to decide. He is against. He's actually spoken about laws maybe that would limit some forms of birth control. Yeah. I mean, that's sort of like people paraphrasing him.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to say. He's against same-sex marriage.
Mm-hmm.
He opposed the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Mm-hmm.
He voted against the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act.
Mm-hmm.
He is a big NRA supporter, National Rifle Association. He's got an A from the National Rifle Association.
What do you need to do to get an A?
He believes that he voted against background check requirements for purchases at gun shows.
Oh, goodness. All right.
He supports conceal carry legislation.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks that it's fine to cross from one state line into another with a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Concealed weapon.
Interesting. I find that to be very non-Republican. That's not very states' rights. It's very individual rights.
Yeah, it's interesting that way. But he thinks it's fine that a person with a permit to carry a concealed firearm in one state can just grow right into another state with that concealed weapon and doesn't have to say or do anything about it.
That's interesting. So I guess I would wonder where he would lean.
If you flew from, let's say, Georgia to New York,
mm-hmm.
you couldn't have a concealed weapon or whatever. He says that's fine.
Uh-huh.
And I'm generalizing about it. But
sure, yeah, of course. Well, you have to. We don't have a lot of time, so, but...
Right. New York City has famously strict gun laws,
mm-hmm.
and he would say, no, it's fine for a person who has a concealed carry weapon to violate New York City and state law by going into New York City with a concealed weapon.
Right, right.
So he's like, he owns a rifle, he goes hunting,
mm-hmm.
he goes deer hunting, you know. Here in the Minnesota, Wisconsin... Great Lakes area, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota. Hunting and fishing are a very important part of the cultures here in
the
state.
Sure, sure. Same with upstate New York, where I'm from.
Yeah, I can't emphasize this enough. I mean, like, the governor goes fishing on opening day of fishing season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the numbers for the first days of every major season, deer, turkey, pheasant, their numbers, they're put in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a major part, they'll sometimes be the front part of the sports section, or at least the whole back part of the sports section will go over that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are big parts of these states' culture, hunting
right.
and he's a big hunter. He has been criticized heavily by environmental groups like the Sierra Club and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a big hunter, and he goes hunting, he goes fishing, he makes his own sausage apparently from things that he kills.
Mm-hmm.
He does.
Fascinating.
Along with using a gun, he's also a bow hunter. He's a big outdoors guy.
So basically in this episode, we have covered Gore Vidal and Paul Ryan, two guys who would never be in the same room together.
Yeah, you could probably just safely assume that both would not like the other. they wouldn't like each other.
Nope.
Let's just put it that way.
No.
And jumping back into something really fast here about, you know, going back to the vice presidential debates,
yeah.
There's no denying that Vice President Biden, when it comes to foreign policy experience,
mm-hmm.
He crushes Ryan in foreign policy experience.
For sure. Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's his thing. It's going to be interesting because those are two, they're just so, their expertise are just so totally
right.
opposing.
This is a Republican ticket that is very weak on foreign policy experience.
Mm-hmm.
Romney was governor of Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have to do much with foreign policy issues.
Unless you count Rhode Island.
Yeah, yeah. I think he prevented a war between Rhode Island and Massachusetts over fishing rights.
Sure.
But Ryan, he's just... I would guess the best way to put him is he's just like a typical Republican on foreign policy issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He just... doesn't have much experience in these foreign policy issues. Maybe because he's the chairman of the House Budget Committee, he knows about spending and defense spending and things like that.
Right.
But that's about as much as you can say.
Yeah.
He voted. One thing about foreign policy that he says that's interesting, he had in the past voted to lift the embargo against Cuba.
That is interesting.
But now he says he wants to keep it going.
I don't. All right. That's interesting.
At one time he said, why are we putting an embargo on Cuba when we trade with China?
Right. Right. I mean, that's
communist, right?
I mean, yeah, right.
One's in our history, one isn't.
Yeah, well, one's way poorer and I guess has a lot less to offer us. But I mean, to be fair, yeah, there's a lot of trade to be had. That's interesting. You know, what this is making me think though, Matt, is at the end of this hour is we should propose right now that you and I get to moderate our own debate, our own vice presidential debate. So
that's a great idea.
So Paul Ryan and Joe Biden, you are cordially invited to a vice presidential debate. Here in Los Angeles or in Minneapolis or in both, where Matt Sachs and Jason Klom will interview you about your potential as a president, as well as your potential about the as a vice president. But I feel like a debate like that would free them up to, not to be floofy about this, floofy's not a word, but to use their imaginations a little bit. To say, what if, genuinely what if, not, oh, what if we get into another war, or do you want to get into another war? That's not the issue. The what if is, the president has died, you have to take over, what do you do? You know?
That's exactly what it has to be about. And we would go after both of them on things that, like, you know, it's hard to go after Biden on much because he's got such a long voting record and has so much experience in so many ways. Ryan's the new, even though he's been in Congress, congressman for like something like five terms, you know, he's been in Congress since 1998, so I guess that's six terms,
12, right.
14
right.
years. He's been in Congress 14 years. We don't know much about how he'd vote on foreign policy issues or anything.
Right.
And we don't know how he'd handle, being vice president of the United States means you preside over the Senate. Well, Congressman Ryan has been in the House of Representatives. He doesn't know anything about the Senate or Senate procedure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And but the main thing is right. What you're saying is right. The question that has to be asked is, the president is dead. What do you do now?
All right, so...
How do you proceed? What is your first thing that you do?
So off the air, Matt, I say you and I discuss how we best approach this. But
yes, well, this will be interesting. I know Vice President Biden is planning some trips here to Minnesota soon.
Yeah.
Congressman Ryan is not too far from here in neighboring Wisconsin.
Sure. So what we do is, again, though we're certain you're not listening, anybody who is listening and has any connection to either camp, you can email us at matt@vicepresidents.com or jason@vicepresidents.com.
Yes.
You can go to stolendress.com, contact us there. I think this should happen. I think genuinely you and I, as vice presidential experts, are the guys to ask the questions. You and I, and maybe get us some Steve Talley. Get some Steve Talley in there.
Yes. You know what? I'd have to look it up because I know like the moderators of all four debates, the three presidential and the one vice mm-hmm. presidential, have been chosen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember off the top of my head who's moderating the vice presidential debate,
mm-hmm.
but I am guaranteeing this on the air right now that we know more about vice presidential issues and what about being vice president is important, what it means to the country, and what they do better than whoever it is.
Yeah.
We could do a better job moderating this debate than they could.
So let's see here. It's all right. So it's going to be Thursday, October 11th, 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. Oh, here we go. Sorry. I apologize to the podcast listeners. They're hearing me clicking around a lot, but that's just because I'm kind of getting excited about this. So let's see. The list of moderators has been released. Let's see here. All right. Jim Lehrer. For the presidential debate, sorry. Martha Raddatz for the vice presidential debate. She's a senior foreign affairs correspondent for ABC News. And let's see, do we have any other... Yeah, no, that's obviously it. Just the one on October 11th.
We get three presidential debates in different formats. We get one vice president.
So here's what we do. I say you and I both contact, or you know what, actually, you're always best at the initial contact. Why don't you contact this Martha Raddatz woman and just be like, look, we'd like to be there. We'd like to at least pose a question each, but we're vice president's experts, and I feel like we have a voice that needs to be heard. in this case.
I think that's a reasonable request. You know, we have like these in this day and age of people asking questions on Twitter and mm-hmm. Facebook and everything. Why would the debate and why would the office that handles debates, these debates, presidential and vice presidential debates, why would they not want two of the foremost experts in the world participating in some way in this debate?
All right, I will fly out. I don't give a darn. I hope I haven't sworn this episode.
Does it say where it's at?
Yeah, I was actually just looking at myself. Let's see. Kentucky. It's right near where my dad lives. I'll fly out to visit my pop, and we will go down, fly into the Barclay International Airport, and go down to it. I mean,
is it Lexington? Is it on the campus of the university? Or
In Danville, Center College. Danville, I do not know how far that is from anywhere, to be fair.
Yeah, I don't know where that is.
Danville, Kentucky, to Barclay.
I apologize to the residents of Danville, Kentucky. I'm not familiar with that.
And right now I can't remember where the Barclay Airport is. Oh my goodness, this is embarrassing. Let's see here. But either way, it's in Kentucky. Kentucky's easy to get to, even if it's hard to get around.
I think the Barclay Airport's near Paducah.
It is. It's in Paducah. Thank you.
Yeah.
The greatest name for a town ever.
I'm a fan of Paducah. I drove through Paducah, Kentucky many times on my way from St. Louis to the University of Alabama.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've actually driven through Paducah, Kentucky quite a few times.
Oh, this is a strong 6-hour drive from Paducah. So one would argue we'd have to fly in elsewhere, but I could still visit my dad. Hi, Dad. It would be worth it, I say.
I'm totally for it.
All right. So we're going to email her. You guys will hear the progress as that goes along. We'll put stuff on the blog.
Yes, we will do all that. I want our people who are listening to this show, this podcast, and our fans on Facebook and everything, you know, it's been a while since we asked you for something, and you did a great job in helping us, supporting us when we were trying to raise funds and get support for the Mondale interview.
Yes, you did.
We're going to again. We're asking for your help. Make noise about us.
Please do. You know,
put us in your Google searches. You know, do stuff to increase knowledge about us and our work and what we're doing.
Big thing is retweet us on Twitter, follow, you know, repeat things that we say, reshare our stuff on Facebook, and definitely follow us on Tumblr, vicepresidents.tumblr.com, reblog us, and definitely, you know what, I'm going to just outright say, once we email Martha Raddatz, go ahead and do that yourself.
Yes. So that's what we want you to do, and it's that simple. You know, if you see something that we posted on Facebook, go and share it.
Yeah.
If you liked one of the old blog posts from, like, you know, a couple years ago, like the one about Sarah Palin and my experience with meeting her at the Mall of America.
Matt's got a lot of great experiences like that on this blog. A lot of wonderful stuff because you've been in the center of that stuff sometimes.
And Jason has posted the wonderful, you know, we got Meet the Veep on IMDb. Meet the Veep and Vice President Barclay are on IMDb because of Jason Klom's effort.
Oh, that's right. I forgot I'd done that. You are correct, sir. That is another goal of mine also is to get a hold of those original tapes and see if CBS would ever let go of them, like get copies so that we could release them online.
Yeah, that would be unbelievable. But these are like major things that we've done. We have made some significant contributions to the vice presidential recognition in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no denying that, you know, I just was, as Jason said earlier in the show, I was featured as an expert on this subject in the Encyclopedia show, which is a show that is around the country in different cities across the country. There is a show done on the same subject at the same time around the country. And I was here in Minneapolis doing the Minneapolis one as the expert on the vice presidency. And I don't know what the other shows had. Like, maybe they had people doing what they had at the Minneapolis show, writing poems about Sarah Palin and singing songs. And one guy read a very good essay about his favorite vice president, which was Henry Wallace.
Awesome.
But only one show across the country had a bona fide vice presidential expert on it. And that was the Minneapolis one with Vice President's Matt Sachs here.
That's pretty awesome. So here's what we're going to do. I want to wrap the episode up because we're running long. Paul Ryan, interesting fellow. Gore Vidal, brilliant, genius man. Very sad to have lost him, but he was wonderful to us. So that's a great experience that we're going to have with us for the rest of our lives. Third and most important, right now, because it's timely, we want to be at the vice presidential debate, so follow the blog, and make sure you follow... Matt, you're on Twitter, right?
I'm on Twitter. VP Matt Sachs, I believe, is my Twitter handle.
Dedication. I'm just Jay Klom. Matt has VP in his title.
Yes, I do.
So, and also follow us at Vice Precedents. Like I said, go to vicepresidents.tumblr.com, facebook.com/vicepresidents. The podcast is now on Facebook as well, so that you can see it. Yeah.
And everything we post on Facebook is sent out on Twitter and sent out on Tumblr.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can, once you connect to one of us on any one of those mediums, Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, you will be able to follow what we're doing and how we're what we posted, the latest breaking news.
And more importantly, tell everybody else about it. That's big.
That's the biggest thing. Share it. You know, you like us. You liked our videos. You know, share a video. Share that YouTube video of Gore or our trailer on your Facebook page.
So
my friend Jeff T did that, and that was really nice of him.
That's awesome.
It's always nice. We always are grateful for fans reposting our videos, saying this is great, liking the videos on Facebook and Funny or Die, you know, sharing our Facebook page, sharing a tweet, retweeting us. Those are simple things you can do to get us more national attention and to legitimize our work and get us more recognition. And that sounds like kind of, you know, like we're trying to get famous or something.
Well, but, to be fair, I mean, it'd be nice, but no, we do have a genuine goal with vice presidents, and that's to raise awareness about the vice presidency. It sounds like a silly thing, but people just don't understand it enough.
In the election year, that's all the more important to understand it.
Exactly. So
and that's why we should be at those debates.
So check out the website, everybody, and Matt, thank you again for doing it this week. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Jason. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, and I think this was an amazing show, to be honest. I really do.
I hope so. I know we can get a little long-winded. But everybody, thank you for listening, and good vice presidenting. Vice Presidents Being Number 2 in the White House is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. Please visit stolendress.com for our other podcasts, blogs, and videos. You can follow Vice Presidents on Facebook and Twitter / Vice Presidents.